All right, let's take a look here at civil rights. Civil rights is an offensive action. It's where we're not here to defend, we're here to offend. We're here to sue, to become a plaintiff, to go into court and to seek a redress for a grievance, a redress for a right. If you've been falsely arrested or falsely imprisoned or maliciously prosecuted, typically it occurs in such areas of civil rights as housing. You may go into the Holiday Inn and they refuse to give you a room unless you got a driver's license, or maybe you wanted to rent a house and they wouldn't rent you a house because you were black. We typically think of civil rights as being concerned with race and race relations, when in reality it covers just about everything, including race and race relations. But it's there for everybody, whether you're black or white or Indian or whatever it happens to be. Any time that a government institution, agency, or agent wrongs you, commits a tort against you, deprives you of some right, privilege, or immunity that you're entitled to, that's a crime. Now, when we take a look at crimes committed in America, there are about 14 million crimes committed against us every year by criminals. To combat that, we hire police and FBI, and we build prisons and jails, and we hire jailers and prison guards to protect us from these criminals. In the process of doing that, the police commit 14,600,000 crimes. Now, of the 14 million crimes that are committed against us by criminals, we don't have to pay the criminals any extra for committing a crime against us, like robbing us, burglarizing our houses, or causing us a damage. But when the police commit 14,600,000 crimes against us every year, we have to pay them their salaries to commit those crimes against us. So the government comes along under the Civil Rights Act of 1868 and enacted a provision which is called Title 42, Section 1983, to prohibit or to give us, it actually won't prohibit it, but it will give you a remedy so that when you're locked up for a month or two and you weren't supposed to be locked up, you were innocent, you didn't do this, then you get compensated. Now, typically for false arrest, the general rule of thumb is $1,000 a day. So if you got arrested and you spent 30 days in jail, you should get $30,000. Well, there is a special act or action called the Civil Rights Act or the Civil Rights Action that you go to in order to achieve that goal. Now, the purpose behind the Civil Rights Act is to give the police and cities a guide to go by and an incentive to follow the Constitution and don't commit crimes against citizens. Now, that's what it's designed for. It works about 26% of the time. That is, of all of the people who file an action, 26 will be successful and 74 will fail. It's the best percentage of all litigation that goes into courts or federal courts in the percentage of those that we receive monetary awards for. Let me tell you a story of a lady up in Ketchikan, Alaska. She parked her car a number of times and didn't put money in the meter and got a number of parking tickets. Now, that's against the law, to park your car and not put money in the meter. And she was given a number of tickets that she didn't pay. Now, if you get a ticket and you don't pay the ticket, that's against the law, and you're not supposed to do that. So the police, in order to enforce this law, arrested her and put her in jail. Now, when the police arrested this lady and put her in jail because she didn't pay the parking tickets, that was a crime. That's against the law. You see, in Alaska, it's against the law to lock somebody up because he doesn't pay a parking ticket. But they did that. They locked her up. They arrested her and jailed her, and that broke the law. Now, two wrongs don't make a right. So she came to class down here and went through the civil rights class. She went up there and she sued them under the Civil Rights Act. And then she settled for what's known as a nuisance value settlement from Northern Adjusters, and she collected $8,000. She went to the city hall to make her closing, and she took the check for $8,000, put it in her shirt pocket, and she walked out of the city hall and got into her car and drove down the street. Now, she doesn't have a driver's license. Now, it's against the law to drive a car without a driver's license. And so the police, knowing that she had just burned them for $8,000 and they were a little ticked off at her, knew that it was against the law to drive a car without a driver's license, and furthermore knew she didn't have a driver's license and she was driving a car. So she was arrested and jailed for driving without a driver's license. Now, the law requires that when you arrest and jail a female, you must have a female guard or a female prison guard or jailer. And in Ketchikan, they didn't have that. Now, by arresting her and jailing her and then locking her up without a female jailer is against the law. So, the police, not knowing quite how to handle this, being men, of course, they gave her her jail suit, told her to go into the dressing room, which, by the way, doesn't have any doors on it, but there's a partition. And it separated the shower and the dressing room from the booking area of the jail, and they told her to go in there and put on the jail suit, so she went in and sat down. And then after a little while, the jailer said, "Are you ready?" And she said, "No, I'm not, and don't you come in here either." And then some more time passed by, and the two jail guards asked, "Well, are you ready?" And she said, "No, and don't you come in here." Well, after this went on for three or four or five times, the jail guards, not knowing quite what to do, said, "Well, we're coming in, and you better be ready. Ready or not, here we come in." And so they came in, and here she was sitting in her street clothes, and she hadn't put on the orange jail suit, and they were very upset, which jailers are not supposed to get upset now, because it's a part of your job description now, you jailers. But not knowing what else to do, they, each one on each side, grabbed a hold of her arms. This is called an assault. And went to pick her up. I don't know exactly what they had in mind when they picked her up out of the chair that she was sitting in. But she screamed, "No, no, don't rape me, don't rape me," as she broke away from them and she escaped. And she was now on the floor, and she crawled out from behind the partition into the jail booking room, where there were three or four or five other witnesses who could see that her blouse was ripped open, the buttons ripped off, her bra was torn, and her breasts were hanging out. This is called an assault and an attempted rape. That's against the law. And she settled that claim for $12,000 in another nuisance value case, in which, after that second settlement, she never had any further problems with the police or the political authorities in Ketchikan, Alaska. This is called making a meaningful political and social change, and this is what occurred in Montgomery, Alabama, with Rosa Parks. You see, they had a law in the books that said blacks have to ride the back of the bus. And this Rosa Parks, in conjunction with the ACLU and the NAACP, two civil rights organizations seeking to make meaningful political and social change in a local area, set about to do so by enlisting Rosa Parks' help. And she got on the bus, sat down on the front of the bus. She was black and broke the law. It was against the law to ride the front of the bus and be black at the same time. She was arrested and jailed. As this case wound its way up through the judicial system to the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Court said, "You know, that law in Mississippi is illegal and unlawful. Under the rational basis test, that law has no basis whatsoever in law, and we want to change that law. So they struck it down as being unconstitutional. And this is the way you make meaningful political and social change at the local level, and at the same time collect monetary damages for having been falsely arrested, falsely prosecuted, and abused. And oftentimes the police, they abuse people, they beat them up. And that is against the law. And what I'm pointing out here to you boys and girls is that, you see, the law applies to the police as well as it applies to us. The problem is, the police will enforce the law against you, the citizen, but the police will not enforce the law against another policeman. We have the same problem with lawyers. You see, lawyers will sue anybody. If it wiggles, moves, or squirms, a lawyer will sue it, all except another lawyer who commits malpractice. Now, you can't find a lawyer to sue a lawyer for malpractice, but you can find a lawyer to sue a doctor for malpractice. Oh, well, you know, sometimes you can't get a level playing field, but you know, as a pro se litigant, you can help to level the playing field. Now, I had a student one time by the name of Rick. Rick was jailed for contempt of court. Now, it's against the law to commit contempt of court. So, while he was in jail, I set about to help Rick in jail, so I paid his rent, and I paid his utilities, and paid him $500 a month to stay in jail as long as possible. So, he didn't purge himself of the contempt, and he stayed in the Ada County Jail for 5 months. This is called a civil rights sting. What we're trying to do here is to find out whether the police are breaking the law. The people who are best equipped to determine if the police are abusing or violating the law are the citizens who the police are violating their rights. So, we have Rick in the county jail. Now, Rick is writing administrative demands and keeping a daily log or journal. Some people call these diaries. And for 5 months, he made demands based upon federal standards for prisons and jails, kind of like Rosa Parks riding the front of the bus. And what he was trying to do was to identify any one of 353 laws being violated by the police or the jailers in the Ada County Jail. In 5 months, he couldn't find a single one. Not a one. Every time he wrote an administrative demand and he said, the law requires that you do this, they did it. And every time he wrote an administrative demand and said, I want this because the law provides for it, they gave it to him. And this went on for 5 months, and I said, well, after about $8,000, that's enough. Rick, you can purge yourself of the contempt and you can come out. Now, in the 2 years prior to Rick's incarceration for 5 months, the police were very naughty people, and they violated the rights of many, many citizens who had availed themselves of the services of the Ada County Jail. For instance, there was a young boy who was incarcerated. He was 17 years old, and he was put over in the adult section of the jail. Now, that's against the law. It's against the law to incarcerate a juvenile in the adult section. Unfortunately, the young boy was killed. And as a result of that, his mother sued the jail for wrongful death and collected $3.5 million. And at the same time this was going on, George Gordon and other concerned citizens were also suing the jail and the jail personnel, along with other concerned citizens who didn't have anything to do with George Gordon, but they were just suing the jail because the jail was breaking the law, which is what citizens are supposed to do. You see, we're supposed to sue those that are in positions of authority who break the law. In the process of doing this, the insurance company noted that Boise City and Ada County were 35% above the national average. So the nice people at the insurance company came into the jail and suggested to them that they ought to change their practices, because if they did not, they were going to cancel their policy and double their premiums. The people at the jail did not change, did not reform themselves, and the insurance company canceled their policy. So in 1983, the Ada County Sheriff's Department jail. The city of Boise was paying $3.2 million for insurance coverage. Well, Idaho requires that you have insurance, so they had to go into the marketplace and get an assigned risk policy from another company, and they doubled their premiums to $7 million. Well, that company, over a period of 1 year, also came into the jail and made numerous suggestions as to how they might change the operation of the jail and bring their 35% rate of lawsuits down to somewhere around the national average. Again, the people in the jail were naughty, and they did not take the good insurance company's advice. And at the end of the second year, that insurance company canceled their insurance, and the law, remember, requires that they go back into the marketplace and get insurance, and the third company raised their rates to $14 million. So their rates went from $3 million to $14 million in 24 months. Then, when that insurance company came in and made good suggestions about how the jail might change its ways, they took the advice, and when our student Rick Mitchell was in the jail, they did not violate his rights even once. Oh, and by the way, there were other people that were associated with me and Barrister Zinn who also collected monetary damages in addition to their insurance going up by $3, $7, and $14 million. The people who were locked up and whose rights were violated also collected monetary damages. You know, that happened in Chicago. You know, in Chicago, they were arresting women and jailing them. What they did was they instructed the policeman, if you see a woman alone driving an automobile, and you're a policeman, you pull your cruiser up behind her and you follow her, looking for a crime. You check her license plate and make sure that it isn't expired. And then you watch her, and as you follow her, and she knows that you're a cop following her, she'll get nervous. And then when she changes lanes, she'll forget to give a signal. Or when she stops at a stop sign, you'll see that one of her stop lights is burned out. And that'll give you probable cause to make a stop. Now, that was a naughty thing to do. And it's called a fishing expedition, and that's against the law. And the police are not supposed to do that. And not only did the police do it, they were instructed to do it by their political supervisors, the mayor and the city council and the chief of police. Well, there was a doctor who was arrested, and she was strip searched. And that's exactly what this scam called for. You see, when you stop this lady and you have probable cause, you walk up and then you ask her for a driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, her safety sticker, and then you've got a chance to look in the car, and if you see a gun or you see cocaine or you see anything that might be contraband, that'll give you grounds to arrest her. And no woman will go to jail and stay in jail if she can bail herself out, and we'll take credit cards, checks. And so with this liberal policy of commerce in the jail, they would now take credit cards and checks as well as cash and bail bonds, and that means that the county made a lot of interest-free loans. That was against the law. You see, the only purpose for bail is to guarantee your appearance in court, not to force people to make interest-free loans. So, over a period of years, 25 years, this practice went on, and many, many people's rights were violated. One federal judge said that he thought more than 500,000 women's rights were violated. That was 500,000 crimes committed by the police in Chicago against the citizens of Chicago. That was bad. That was against the law. You see, that was naughty. They weren't supposed to do that, but they did. So one doctor, and it takes somebody like this, a doctor, went ahead and sued. And when this case was finally adjudicated, she collected $112,000. That's right, $112,000, because she was falsely arrested, jailed, and strip searched. using this program. Now, maybe what she did, maybe she was driving her car and her stoplights weren't working, and maybe she was speeding, and maybe she was breaking the law. But you see, it's against the law for the policeman to break the law. Yeah, that's right. And if the policeman acts under color of law, that is, if he pretends that he's using the law in order to enforce the law, and he does that with the express purpose of breaking the law so that he can violate your rights and commit a crime against you, that's actionable, and we need to take action. And the only people that can do that are called citizens, because the police don't police the police. The police police citizens, and the citizen police the police. That's why George Gordon is a civil rights investigator. And I would like to enlist you in the cause of civil rights. Because, you see, it's not a racial thing, it's a law and order thing. And the president, Bill Clinton, he said, we need 100,000 more policemen out on the streets so that we can control and we can detect and we can punish crimes committed by citizens. Well, the number of crimes committed by criminals against us citizens are about 14 million a year, and the number of crimes committed by the police against citizens is another 14 million. I say we need another 100,000 citizens, people just like you, who are trained and can identify crime and can gather names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and then come into court as a pro se litigant and press those charges, present those claims, and punish those wicked policemen who violate the law. Yeah, that's right. Policemen that break the law are criminals. And there's approximately 14 million of those crimes being committed every year. And we need to stop it. Crime should be stopped wherever it raises its ugly head. Whether it's in the Ramparts Division of the Los Angeles Police Department, where the police have violated the rights of people, even to the extent of taking evidence and coming into court with phony evidence to convict people who were innocent and hadn't done the crime. Yeah, that's right. That's malicious prosecution. And those crimes ought to be exposed and punished. Now, you know, you can stay out of a whole lot more trouble than you can get yourself out of, and I would like to suggest my civil rights class to teach you how to stay out of trouble. And this is a school for people who want to stay out of jail. Yeah, that sounds kind of peculiar, but if you want to stay out of trouble, you need to know the law and how to use the law. You know, I stay out of more trouble than I can get myself out of, but from time to time, when trouble overtakes you, people will call me at the law school and they'll say, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, it's so good to talk to you. My son Bobby has been arrested and jailed on a drug charge, and I can't get in to see him, and we can't get him out of jail, and we don't know what to do." All right, so let me explain it. When you get into trouble, you need a lawyer. You see, this is a law school. This is not a law firm. We don't deal with people when they get into trouble. We deal with people before they get into trouble and teach them how to stay out of trouble, how to stay out of jail, how to stay out of the kinds of problems that people are involved in every day. Like, I didn't pay my child support, and now they're going to arrest me and jail me, or they're going to take my children away from me, or. Now, if you would like to learn how to do just that, stay out of trouble, then civil rights is the class for you. Now, the number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's the Gordon Law School, area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to the webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And click onto my email machine and send me an email request and tell me that you'd like to learn more about, or you'd like to have us tell you more about, this thing called the Civil Rights Act. When you want to make meaningful political and social change in your town, like we did in Boise, Idaho. You can do it, and you can do it by yourself. You don't need to vote for Bill Clinton or anybody else. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back, and I've got three more lessons, their classes to take up. Let's take a look at subsistence and survival, how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less, and the Mosaic Law School coming up on Disc 3. Stand by.